This is Your Life, episode 66. Hello and welcome to this episode of This Is Your Life. My name is Michael Hyatt and this is the podcast dedicated to intentional leadership. My goal is to help you live with more passion, work with greater focus, and lead with extraordinary influence. Well, hey, I know it's been a few weeks. I've taken a bit of a hiatus, which I'll explain in a minute. But in this episode, we're going to be talking about the difference between the wise and the foolish, and more importantly, why it matters to you. But first, this podcast is brought to you by Platform University, an online membership site for helping you launch your personal platform or take it to the next level. You can find out more at platformuniversity.com. By the way, if you're already a member, be sure and check out the new masterclass, which we just released yesterday with my friend Pat Flynn. He shares some gold on basically how to generate passive income from your platform in a way that exudes integrity but maximizes your income. Terrific. He's a great example of that, and he bears all in this masterclass. So check us out at Platform University. I want to talk just a little bit about the last 3 weeks because I've been on a hiatus, and it just got to that point where my fall schedule was so jammed with stuff, and I was really up against the pipes in terms of, frankly, overcommitment, and something had to go. And so I decided that at least for the next 3 weeks, this was 3 weeks ago or 4 weeks ago, I would put the podcast on hiatus so I could give my attention to some other things that weren't as urgent, but they're really important to me. So, for example, we spent a week doing a video shoot for Platform University, and I have a great video crew that came down from Canada, and we shot in and around Franklin, my hometown. We did master classes, we did backstage passes, we did member makeovers. We began to shoot a new course that we're going to be releasing next year, which I can't wait to tell you about, but I'm not going to tell you about it yet. And so that was an intense week. And when we do those video shoots, you know, it's early in the morning till late at night, and these guys have unbelievable stamina, and they work me hard. And I'm grateful because I think we got some terrific stuff. It really stimulates my creative thinking. Well, we rolled right out of that week to the launch conference, which is a conference that my partner Ken Davis and I host in Vail, Colorado, and we had a sold-out conference. This is all about the business of public speaking, and we try to help our students learn how to launch their public speaking business, how they can take it to the next level, and we talk about everything from creating products that you can sell at the back of the room or on your website, to identifying your market and getting really clear on that, to how do you promote yourself, how do you create inbound marketing, how do you set your fees, how do you negotiate your contracts, all of that. But I loved that time. But again, that was from early in the morning till late at night, and it was great but exhausting. But I there are a few things I love more than hosting my own conferences. Well, then I left from the launch conference, flew out to Santa Clara, California to attend Brendan Burchard's conference, Experts Academy. There were probably 600 people there, but honestly, one of the top three conferences I've ever attended, maybe even the top. You know, it kind of had the energy and the inspiration of a Tony Robbins conference, but it had unbelievable practicality. It was news I could use, and I took notes till I thought my hand was going to fall off, and Gail was right there beside me, and our friends, Dan and Joanne Miller. Dan actually was the one that initiated this and had invited me to come, but we learned a ton. We heard from all kinds of guest speakers that were there, including Marie Forleo, who was terrific. Jeff Walker, I've been studying his new product launch formula series, and so it was just great to hear from him in person. And then we also heard from Shalene Johnson, whom I didn't know previously. Some of you are probably laughing because you're very familiar with her. But she was awesome. So transparent, so authentic. Gail especially connected with her. But just a great, great conference. And we just got back home a few days ago. And so this week has been catch up. But one of the things that I learned in this process is I have got to prune my calendar. I've got to be more strategic. I've got to be more intentional. Duh, something I write about all the time. And I've got to just be more thoughtful in what I allow on my calendar, because this kind of schedule is not sustainable. And I know that, and you probably know that as well. So one of the things I did when I got back is I decided that I was going to cut the number of speaking engagements I do each year from 30 to 10. And that doesn't include the events that I host, which are the launch conference, the SCORE conference, and the platform conference. But these are outside events, from 30 to 10, which is tough because I love to speak. But what I realized and what I had to come face to face with is the fact that I'm typically spending 4 days per speaking engagement. I mean, that includes the time of preparation, the travel getting there, the event itself, and then coming back and getting caught up. So it's about a 4-day commitment. And to be honest, it's just not a great return on investment. As much as I enjoy it when I'm there, travel, I'm less and less patient with it. It seems like it's more and more hassle. And if I go, I want to go to an audience where I'm not just the entertainment, but where I'm there really to create and be involved in creating a transformation. So I'm going to be very picky about what I accept. And obviously I've got some dates in the pipeline that I almost say have to fulfill, but I get to fulfill because it is a privilege to speak to those people. But going forward, I'm going to be very picky, very deliberate, very strategic about it. I also been thinking a lot about this podcast, and I'm going to make some changes on this as well. As I mentioned, I was on a hiatus for 3 weeks, and it really allowed me to stop and think and think what I want to accomplish going forward. And I still want to stay focused on a topic. So each week I'm going to go to a different topic. And I like that because I think it allows me to add value to you where you can focus on that topic as well, as opposed to, and you know how some of these podcasts are, where it's just somebody rambling on and on for 30 to 45 minutes. And frankly, I have less and less patience for that. I need to know based on the topic if it's going to be relevant to me and if it's going to be something I can use. So I'm still going to stay focused on a topic, but, and I'm already doing this in this episode, it's not going to be scripted. I'm one of those chronic over-preparers, and I don't know how else to say it, but I'm a perfectionist. The reason I talk about a lot about perfectionism is, or perfectionism is the mother of procrastination, is because I got that disease. You know, I'm a recovering perfectionist. And so what that means is when I prepare to do anything, I prepare, over-prepare. If you could see my podcast show prep up until this point, it's extensive. I mean, usually it's about 9 to 12 pages of content. Not every word was scripted out, but almost every word. And I don't know if that really reflects, you know, a lack of trust that I have in myself. And it's probably somewhere between that and just really wanting to add value to you and make sure that I deliver. But the thing I've come to terms with is that that amount of preparation is taking me more than a half a day a week. And it's just extensive. And frankly, I'm not sure it's any better when I do that as opposed to having some rough notes and then just talking more impromptu and talking out of my heart. So that's what I'm going to do. This is going to be unscripted, sort of like, you know, the acoustic set, unplugged. And we'll see if it works. You know, if it doesn't work, then we'll try something else. The other thing I decided to do is to make the questions at the end of the podcast about anything. As you probably know, if you've been listening to the podcast, I've tried to have those focused on the podcast topic. And here's the problem with that. I announce the topic, and then you only have a few days to answer the questions before I kind of close the gates and record that episode. So what I want to do now is I just want to open it wide open. And I think it'll create a lot more interest and it'll give me the kind of feedback I need to know what direction I need to move in, because I can see by the kinds of questions that are being asked, by the topics that recur, I can see where I need to go with the content. So, you know, I consider it an incredible honor that you would spend this time with me. And I want to make sure that I'm addressing the issues that are important to you. And one of the things I can do, I think, to make sure that that happens is to kind of open the doors and let you ask any question you want to ask. Now, I get questions by email and even on voicemail typically hundreds of these a week. And I don't really have any venue for asking or for answering those. You know, I don't have time. I don't have the staff to be able to write back and answer everybody, although we try to answer every single person and point them to a blog post or something that'll help them. But I love the idea, what Andy Stanley talks about, do for a few what you wished you could do for many. It's not possible for me to answer every question, but I'm going to do for a few on this podcast what I wished I could do for everybody, and that is share with you whatever insight I have on whatever question you have. The next thing we're going to do to change the format is I want it to be shorter. My podcasts typically run about 40 minutes, and honestly, I think 30 minutes is enough. You know, that's about the programming module that's used in television and radio, and I know there are longer form shows and formats, but 30 minutes seems about the right length of time. And I've had several people write to me and gently and graciously ask me to consider doing that, because when they're on a commute or they're out on a run, typically that's 30 minutes or less. So I'm going to do my very best to do that. I'm going to also try to do this all in one take. So no editing. You're going to hear my ums and my ahs and my thinking out loud and all the rest. And so I realize you may not like this format. And if that's the case, I want to hear from you. And you may like it even better. So we'll just see. I'm going to give you a chance to respond at the end of the podcast, because I really, again, want to make sure this adds value to you. So let's go to the main topic. It's the difference between the wise and the foolish, something that I became very conscious of several months ago when I had a business acquaintance call me and he wanted some advice. And so he was telling me about this particular challenge that he was facing at work. And he went on. And every time I would suggest something, he would get defensive. He'd either thought of it or he had tried it or he had, you know, three reasons why that wouldn't work. And he just wasn't interested in change. And that was clear. And I've certainly had employees like that in the past. I've had people in my own family like that in the past. And honestly, I'm confident I've been just like that in the past. Well, a few days later, I was having a conversation with my good friend, Robert Smith, who happens to be Andy Andrews' manager. And Robert was telling me about this incredible book he had read called Necessary Endings, the subtitle, The Employees, Businesses, and Relationships That All of Us Have to Give Up in Order to Move Forward by Dr. Henry Cloud. And he said, Michael, you have got to read chapter 7. He said, promise me you'll read chapter 7. He said, I found this so helpful this year in working with people in my business that frankly needed to go. And I said, terrific. Okay, so I read it. So the first thing I did was I read chapter 7. It was so stinking good that I backed up and I read the whole book through. And I've recommended this book. I've given this book away. But it is a must-read book if you deal with people. And obviously, all of us deal with people. I don't care if you're a leader in a business, if you're an employer, if you're a small business person, if you're working with customers, if you employ people either in real life or virtually, or just in your family, this is information that I think you'll find highly, highly relevant. And one of the things to know, I think, as you're thinking about the wise and the foolish is, first of all, it's not about the position. You know, we've all known people that were bosses or leaders or elected officials or whatever, and they've been extremely foolish. I had a pastor in college, somebody I really looked up to, that did an unbelievably foolish thing and basically tanked his marriage of 30-some years in a very foolish act and left not only his family scarred, but the whole congregation and the community scarred. I mean, it was a scandal. But it's not about position. You never get to the point in your position where you don't have the potential of being a fool. It's also not about intelligence. You know, I've known lots of people that were really smart that when it came down to it, they weren't very wise. And so wisdom and intelligence are two different things. They're not the exact same thing. You know, you could have a PhD and be foolish. Conversely, you could be someone with no education and be very wise. And I've known people just like that, that didn't have formal education, but they had huge wisdom. Sometimes they call that street smarts. It's not about position. It's not about intelligence. It's not even about talent. Sometimes people that are extraordinarily gifted, extraordinarily talented, can be really foolish. And maybe not in every area of their life, but in some areas of their life. And it creates problems for them and for others. Well, according to King Solomon, Dr. Cloud brings us out in his book, there's one major thing that differentiates a wise person from a fool, and it's this: how he or she receives instruction and correction. That's it. Whether or not you're teachable, whether or not you're willing to listen. And a couple things that I want to share with you that come out of the book and come out of that definition, and it's these. First of all, we have to understand how this difference manifests itself. And I think it's like this. A wise person listens without being defensive. And we've had these conversations perhaps in the past with someone, and they were defensive, like my business associate that I was talking with, or business acquaintance that I was talking with, you know, had some reason why he couldn't do it, why he'd already tried it, you know, blah, blah, blah. But a person who's wise is someone who listens without being defensive. They may take notes, they may ask clarifying questions, but their spirit is open. Second attribute of a wise person is they accept responsibility without blame. I had a person who used to work for me at Thomas Nelson. I'll say her name. Her name was Pamela Clements. And Pamela was my VP of marketing when I was the head of Nelson Books. And then I moved on to another position in the company, and she became a publisher. Pamela was someone who never was defensive. In fact, she was a person who would come to me with problems before I heard about them. And I loved that about her. She made plenty of mistakes, as did I, but she didn't defend herself. You know, she took full responsibility. And I loved that about her. And my boss at Thomas Nelson for a number of years was my predecessor, the CEO of the company, Sam Moore. And Sam was the kind of guy that could be very difficult to work for if you were unwilling to accept responsibility. He didn't suffer fools well. And so if you came into him and you tried to be defensive, I mean, he would give it to you. And I saw him really blister some of my colleagues because they were defensive and they were unwilling to accept responsibility. And I always fell on my sword in his presence, so to speak, and took responsibility. And so I didn't have issues with him. Another attribute of a wise person is that they change without delay. You know, they don't procrastinate. If they see something that needs to be fixed, they're on it. And I think this is a huge attribute of someone who is wise as well. So again, this is how this whole idea of receiving instruction and correction manifests itself. Now, converse to that, a fool, they don't listen and they are defensive. You know, they've got 1,001 reasons why they can't change, why the situation can't be changed. And they won't accept responsibility. The problem is always out there. They're the victim. If you listen, they may not use that language, but that's essentially what they're saying, is that they're the victim. There are forces that are beyond their control that are having an effect on them, and that's why they can't take responsibility, why it's not their fault, and why they can't change. And they do procrastinate change. They may tell you they're going to change, but nothing really changes. They may acknowledge the problem, and this is key. Because if they're doing all these things, they're listening to you, they're not being defensive, they seem to be accepting responsibility. But if nothing changes, and this sounds harsh, they're a fool. When confronted with the need to change, they change. It's like a person who looks in the mirror, sees a blemish, and takes corrective action. That's what a wise person does. And I suppose we really have to understand, and this is kind of one thing where we have to go after we understand the difference and how that difference manifests itself, is what's the strategy for dealing with fools versus dealing with the wise. Now, if you're like most people, you try to talk with people. You know, if you see a problem, you want to talk it out. You want to explain it. You want to help the person understand. And if you're dealing with a wise person, and again, this is from Dr. Cloud's book, if you're dealing with a wise person, more talking helps. But get this, with a fool, it's a waste of time. This is why you have those conversations that never seem to go anywhere. You know, you're talking to a fool. You can talk and talk and talk, and you'll go round and round in circles, but nothing ever changes. And that's because fundamentally they're being foolish. They're not wise, and it's not you, it's them. So you've got to change your strategy. And what Dr. Cloud says that is, if you're dealing with a fool, stop talking, set limits, and provide consequences, because that's the only thing they understand. You've got to set consequences. Maybe it's a deadline for a project, but there's got to be some consequence to not meeting that deadline. And if you don't set a consequence, you're going to just waste your time, because they're not going to change. Talking will not help the situation. And I guess, you know, where this comes full circle for all of us is, which are we? Are we wise or are we foolish? Or maybe to put a little finer spin on it, is there an area of our life where we're being foolish and not wise? And if we are, hopefully this distinction will help us, that we need to listen to those that are placed around us, to the instruction of the people who are our mentors or our parents or the people that love us. Are we listening to them? Are we taking responsibility and not blaming others? I mean, as soon as you sense in your own spirit that you're blaming somebody else, you're in the danger zone. You've got to own it. And the great thing about owning it is that once you do, everything becomes possible because change is possible. As long as it's out there, you can't affect it. You can't change it. But as long as it's something that you're responsible for, you can address that. You may need additional resources. You may need additional instruction, but you can flat do something about that. So I hope that's been helpful. I'll be back in a minute with our listener Q&A segment. Welcome back. Adam is up with our first question. And again, these are going to be topic focused this week, but starting next week, these questions can be on anything you want. But these are questions about the difference between the wise and the foolish. Adam, take it away.
Michael, my name is Adam Whitmer, and I'm from Fort Wayne, Indiana. Thanks to your book platform, I now blog at bizanatomy.com, where I discuss topics such as innovation, strategy, and leadership. My question is about being wise or foolish. As a detailed person who is extremely risk-averse, I often take extra proactive steps to avoid being foolish. However, this often results in not taking much risk at all, which might actually be considered foolish in and of itself. My question is, how does someone who is risk-averse and extremely detailed balance risk and the difference between wisdom and foolishness? Any feedback you have regarding how different personality types play into being wise or foolish would be appreciated. Thanks for all you do, as I find your content to be both inspiring and done with excellence. Thanks, Michael.
Adam, that's an outstanding question. In fact, it's a very wise question because I think a lot of us struggle with that. You know, knowing what you should do and having the courage to do it are two different things. And I wouldn't make the distinction between wise and foolish here, but it's really a matter of courage. And I think there comes a point at which you know the right course of action and more information is unnecessary. You just need to act. You need to get in the game. And most importantly, you need to start. And so I try to boil it down to what's that next step that I need to take. And there have been times when I've been maybe overwhelmed or I knew there was something I needed to take and I was tempted, a step I needed to take, but I was tempted to get more analysis, but that it would only result in paralysis. And so I just had to act. So at some point, you just got to take that step. I don't know how to tell you to do it other than to recognize or learn to recognize it in yourself and just go, it's time to act. Pick up that phone, make the phone call, send that email, do whatever is necessary, but take that next step and learn to practice courage. That's equally as important as wisdom. Terrific question. Next one comes from Andrew.
Hey there, Michael. Andrew Mason here from Delaware, and I interview thought leaders like yourself over at ProGuide.io. My question is this. In my mind, one of the biggest differences between wise people and foolish people is this. Foolish people, they're not willing to listen or learn. And so what do you think happens in the heart or mind of someone who's on the path to wisdom that makes them hungry to listen? Thanks a lot. I love the great podcast work. Keep it up.
Andrew, I love this question. I think that there are several things that probably happen in the heart of someone who's on the path to wisdom and really trying to pursue wisdom. And one is that they realize they don't have all the answers. I can tell you that sometimes that's a progressive realization. I used to think back when I was in my late 20s and my early 30s, I'd experienced some early success. And I thought, you know, I kind of got all the answers. I mean, I never would have actually said that in my head. But I acted as though it were true, you know, that I had arrived and that I was the guy that had the answers. I was the smartest guy in the room. That's an extremely dangerous position to be in. And inevitably, I was humbled because I went through a colossal business failure and thus began my education. So I think that for most people, they come to the realization that they don't have all the answers, that there's more to learn, and they get hungry to know more. They get hungry to learn more. And I think that a person who is going to be wise has got to be curious. And this is something we can cultivate. We can cultivate it in our conversations with other people. We can cultivate it just in our life overall. You know, are we reading books? Are we attending conferences? And I'm a bit of a conference junkie, but the reason I go is because I want wisdom. I want to learn. I want to learn from people that I know have gone before me, who are smarter than I, and whose mistakes I don't have to repeat. So I think this is something that definitely can be cultivated. And one of the best places to practice it is in our conversations with the people that are around us. You know, if we find ourselves always pontificating, always giving the answers, that's a clue. You know, we're, again, on dangerous ground. I think it's much better to be the guy who's always asking the questions, who always asks that second question. So when you ask one of your friends, for example, a question and they respond, ask another question to go deeper. Be an earnest learner. Get very good at asking questions, because the questions are what determine the quality of our life. The questions are what determine the level of wisdom that we attain. Great, great question, Andrew. The next one comes from Danny.
Hi, Michael. My name is Danny Dales Reyes. I live in Dallas, Texas. My blog is youngcreativeministry.com, where I blog about creativity for young church communicators. My question is about the difference between being young and being foolish. When you're younger, you're expected to fail more because you're just starting out. But where's the line between making beginner mistakes and foolish mistakes? When are you expected to get it together? Thanks for the content on your podcast and blog. I look forward to this episode.
Danny, I honestly don't think age has anything to do with wisdom or foolishness. I've met some very old fools and some very wise young people. It really has to do with this distinction about teachability. And if I were leading young people, and certainly I've raised five daughters, I used to lead the youth group at our church, one of the things I would do is I would teach this distinction. And I would tell people, I would tell these young people that they can be wise, that it really comes down to their posture toward learning and humility. You know, that's probably something I should have said the main part of the podcast, but humility is really sort of the necessary condition before we can acquire wisdom. We have to acknowledge, as I said in the answer to Andrew, that we don't know everything and that we're beginners. And, you know, there's this idea in Buddhist thought that I think is very good. While I'm not a Buddhist, I think this is a very good thought. And that's the idea of cultivating beginner's mind, not acting as though we know everything, but starting at the beginning and acting as if this were our first time to approach the subject. And in some ways, people that are young have that advantage. And I know because of insecurity and all the rest, they go through periods where they feel like they've got to act like they know it all. And certainly my kids did that, and I did it too. But you've got to get to the point where you're willing to learn. So I would make that distinction even with young people and get them to practice wisdom from a very early age, and even to explain it to grade school kids and maybe even younger than that. So great question. The last one comes from Travis.
Hi, Michael. It's Travis Dommert calling from I Run, You Run in Atlanta. I've been using Proverbs a lot this summer to try to teach my oldest daughter some lessons on wisdom and foolishness. And I feel like we've got enough trust in our relationship that I can talk pretty openly about foolish behavior without her feeling like I'm branding her a fool or that I'm being really critical or have a negative opinion of her. But in the workplace, how can we build that kind of deep trust that enables us to point out someone's foolish behavior without causing a really defensive response? Do you suggest we start by talking about our own foolishness? Just curious to get your thoughts on how to broach this kind of truth at work. I think it's really important. Thanks for all you do, Michael. Bye-bye.
Thanks for that question, Travis. Certainly, we have to be very careful about applying these labels. And I'm not suggesting that we use these labels and start applying them to people so that we can write them off or somehow put them beyond the realm of possibility of change. We can't do that. We've got to hold out hope as leaders. I think it's really about using the right strategy with them and whether we need to keep talking or whether we need to start enforcing the consequences. So I think at some point, you've got to begin asking yourself the question, again, internally, not out loud, is this wise behavior or is this foolish behavior? And what is my strategy going to be for dealing with this person? Do I just need to continue to talk because they're eager to learn and they will self-correct their behavior? Or is this something where we need to impose some consequences? But I would never use that label because that's only going to make people defensive, even the best people defensive. So what I would do, I think, in the context of work is I would talk about my own failures, times when I've acted foolish, and I would certainly model this kind of behavior in my own organization. Make it easy, for example, for people to correct you, and then model how you respond to it. If you as the leader are always defensive, if you don't listen, if you interrupt people, if you don't ask clarifying questions so that they can go deeper, if you don't draw them out, then guess what? They're going to model your behavior in their interactions with one another and with the people that they try to lead. So I would model it first and foremost. I would be as authentic and as vulnerable as you can be in terms of your own failures. This gives people permission to fail and to openly acknowledge failure. It doesn't have to be this terrible thing in your organization to make a mistake. No, admit it, get it out there, and then move on from it. But be wise about it. Acknowledge it and don't be defensive. So I really do think that this comes back to us as leaders. We've got to model the behavior that we expect in others. Great questions. Again, next week, any question you want to ask, I'll take them all. And if I don't know the answer, I'll tell you that too. But now it's your turn. Who is the best example of someone you know who is wise? And what makes them wise? Maybe it's a parent, maybe it's a boss, maybe it's a friend, maybe it's somebody at church. But who is the best example and what makes them wise? Well, to comment on this episode, go to my blog at michaelhyatt.com/66, as in episode 66, and I'll be back in a few minutes with some announcements. Don't close your eyes. Don't close your eyes. Don't close your eyes. Don't close your eyes. This is your life. All right, two quick announcements. If you're considering launching your own platform or you're just getting serious about it, you need to start with a self-hosted WordPress blog. You've heard me say this before. It's important. It's not as complicated as it sounds. In fact, I put together a step-by-step screencast on exactly how you can do it. You don't need any technical knowledge. I talk you through the entire process in exactly 20 minutes. And by the way, I updated the screencast a few weeks ago, so it has the latest and the greatest information available. And the screencast is absolutely free, but you can find it at michaelhyatt.com/WordPress setup. I want to talk to you for a few minutes about the Platform Conference. It's going to be held on November the 3rd through the 5th, 2013 in Dallas, Texas. If you're serious about building your platform, you cannot afford to miss this conference. We've got a terrific lineup of speakers. We've got Lisa Turkhurst, who is unbelievable on the topic of building the marketing into your products so people want to talk about them and so you can jumpstart word of mouth. Amy Porterfield's going to be there, one of the world's leading experts on Facebook marketing. Derek Halpern, who has a website called Social Triggers, and he's got all this research on the psychology of selling and how to design your websites in a way that take advantage of that. Cliff Ravenscraft, the podcast answer man, will be there to talk about podcasting and why you need to consider it if you're considering taking your platform to the next level. Stu McLaren, the master of membership sites, and he's my partner at Platform University. Ray Edwards, one of the best copywriters in the world, is going to be talking about how to write for the web. Jeff Goines, he was at the last Platform Conference. I've interviewed him at Platform University, but a terrific example of somebody who really knows how to write and connect with an audience and to build your platform quickly. And of course, Ken Davis, my partner, will be there. He'll be talking about wow and how to create wow in your products. And I'll be doing a couple sessions as well, but I'd love to see you there. This is not a big conference, a couple hundred people. I'll be there the entire time interacting with the audience, and this is a terrific opportunity for us to get acquainted, shake hands, and be with other like-minded platform builders all intent on doing the same thing. So you can find out more at platformconference.tv. We're about half registered for that, and so we still have some tickets left, but I can promise you they're going to go quickly as we move toward the date, so don't miss this opportunity to build your platform. Finally, if you've got a question about any topic, as I've said, please leave me a voicemail message at michaelhyatt.com/podcast question. This is a terrific way to cross-promote your blog or website because I'll link to it, just like I did with the callers in this episode. Well, that's about it for this episode of This Is Your Life. If you like this more unscripted podcast format, I'd love to hear from you. In fact, if you hate it, I'd love to hear from you. But you can tell me what you think at michaelhyatt.com/survey. I've just got a simple survey there where you can answer one question, whether you like it or not, and then you can leave me a comment. And trust me, I will read every single comment. I'll process it. And then I want to be wise and I want to act accordingly based on the feedback. So until next time, remember, your life is a gift. Now go make it count. This is your life. Are you who you wanna be? This is your life. Are you who you wanna be? This is your life. Is everything you dreamed it would be when the world was younger and you had everything?